All right. So, in our discussions about this and kind of revamping this training, we kind of decided to start where the whole foundation of Clean Water's work comes from. And that's really compliance with the NPDES Phase 1 Municipal Stormwater Permit. And for those that don't know, it's National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System. If I remember right, I have acronyms flying around in my head lately. So that's, anyway, the whole genesis of this is that this is based in both state and federal law. EPA and the Federal Clean Water Act. There's a lot of history to that that I'm not going to touch on here, but the authority is delegated by EPA to Ecology, and there is your acronym. I didn't even realize it was spelled out on here, and I got it right. So that's happy accident. NPDES goes beyond just stormwater. There are many different implementations of what's known as NPDES, but in this case, our permit is the municipal stormwater permit. There are also waste discharge permits. There's industrial permits. There's construction permits. It's a wide range of them that are all administered by in Washington, the Department of Ecology. Other states have their own agencies that administer these things, but in our case, it's Ecology and Clean Water Division, at least this side of it, setting this treatment plant aside, is focused on the municipal stormwater permit and compliance with it. So the whole general purpose of that permit is to regulate discharges to waters of the state. There is a cycle on which it updates. It is sort of a living document. It doesn't update every year or anything. It's a 5-year permit cycle. And in the last couple of cycles, Ecology has, and the permittees have developed sort of an ad hoc process that Rod really participates heavily in as our sort of our permit manager. And that gives all the permittees an opportunity to give their two cents on how this permit works and how it's written and all of the requirements. And everybody has their own opinions on various requirements in the permit. There's constantly talk about it, and especially with the next update coming in 2 years. We're more than halfway through this permit, which is kind of incredible to me. Any case, so for the county, our permit compliance is led by our division. Other divisions and other parts of the county take part in complying with it, but we really are kind of the lead on it. So we're supported by roads, for example, and our operations crews who do a lot of our facility maintenance for us. Vegetation management takes part in it. Engineering and construction take part in our program. So there's a bunch of requirements and criteria of this permit that have to be complied with. And the whole purpose of compliance, of course, is maintaining water body health, quality of life, and a high standard of public health. The consequence of not complying, aside from just Ecology fines and a slap on the back of the wrist, there's always the risk of third-party lawsuits. It's happened before, not just to Clark County, but elsewhere. It has happened. Environmental groups watch agencies closely for violations of these permits. It's always something you got to be conscious of. Any case. I think this is an old version of the slideshow, actually. I think I have the wrong one up because this doesn't have the numbers after them. Let me see if I can find the other one because do. Sorry, everybody. Must have pulled up the wrong one. I want to make sure I'm showing you guys the right slideshow. Oh no. Sorry, guys. My fault. It's what happens when you have too many meetings in a day. And then don't get on the VPN. Alice, if you have easy access to it, feel free to open it if it's going to be faster than me, but I might be able to get it up right now.
Okay, I'm working on it. I haven't.
I think I might have gotten it. Oh, I win. Hey, I did it. All right, this is fine. This has the correct title slide too, so. There you go. Pretty front title slide, guys. This is the correct one. what we wanted to do was that old slide that I showed you had some program components on it, but what we wanted to do is we actually wanted to kind of show the program components and sort of the genesis of those from the permit. So the permit has 9 sections in it. Some are relevant to us and some aren't. And there's some reasons for that I'll talk about in a minute here, but the biggest drivers of our actual programming and our actual work are S5 and S8. S5 is our stormwater management plan and it governs our capital planning and projects and really what comes down to structural stormwater controls that Jeff's going to talk a little bit more about. S8 is monitoring and assessment. So, those are two big chunks of our work. And you can see just how much falls under S5 here, specifically S5C. This is storm sewer inventory and mapping, coordination with the other jurisdictions, public involvement, which is, you guys are a part of that. You show up, the Clean Water Commission shows up in our stormwater management plan under the public involvement heading. Code and manual updates are part of it, and part of that is the development standards, which we get an assist in enforcing those during design phase of projects from our community development group. They're a huge part of implementing that manual when it comes to the development community. Planning and capital projects are very tied together for us. Again, Jeff's going to talk about that. Source control and illicit connections to the storm system. We have a staff member that pretty much dedicates just about all of his time to source control and responding to complaints. And he does a lot of education work with business owners, especially when those business owners turn over and the new person doesn't know a whole lot about this and the facility that they've taken ownership of. Facility maintenance, again, we get a huge assist from road ops on that, and that'll show up in an org chart that I'm going to pull up later. Education and outreach. I know some of you have heard from Eric. He's the man is a force of nature. He does a lot of work on the education and outreach and really on the cooperation with their jurisdictions front. And then, of course, there's our monitoring and watershed planning work. Rod takes on the watershed planning work with some assistance from our one engineer aside from me. And then we have a whole monitoring crew that takes care of our surface water and stormwater monitoring. That's one heading, but there's a lot that falls under that. So I know there have been some questions about how, jurisdictional issues work with this. There are other local permittees. We are a phase 1, which there's a population threshold and a size of MS4 or municipal separate storm sewer threshold that dictates whether you're phase 1 or a phase 2 community. And those smaller communities fall under the phase 2 umbrella. They actually have a different permit written altogether. So City of Vancouver and Camas are named phase 2 permittees. Ridgefield and La Center are not named in the phase 2 permit yet. Once they cross a certain threshold, someday I'm sure they will be. But I don't know. Earlier, I kind of alluded to certain sections of the permit not being relevant to us. S6 is one of those. That actually governs the activities of secondary permittees, which is, how ecology finds out that certain entities should be named secondary permittees. I actually don't know much about that process. But a great example is WSU Vancouver. They own a large property. They have their own storm system, their own stormwater facilities. They are actually a named permittee with a notice of intent to comply filed with ecology. They have their own stormwater management plan. So the permit does deal with non-municipal agencies that can own MS4s and businesses. You don't see a ton of them, but there's a decent list in the permit. Again, if you want to see the whole list, it's in there, but WSU Vancouver is the one that comes to mind because we, they're a partner on some of our or work. So again, I alluded to the nine sections. This is them. I'm not going to read everything in here. But S1 is where you're going to find all those permittees named. S2 gives a little bit of background about the relationship to the Clean Water Act. S3 and S4 are funny to me, and I was kind of mentioning that some of these feel like they could be combined, but nonetheless, I mean, S3 and S4 say thou shalt comply, and this is how. One of the things that falls under S4 is violation reporting and response, and that's a whole system with ecology where, you know, if ecology gets a report, it gets delegated to the jurisdiction in charge, and we send people out. S5, I already went over a bit. That's that S5C 2 through 11 that really cover these items. S6, already mentioned, not relevant. S7 deals with TMDLs. We do take a bit of part in those, and Jeff knows a lot more about our involvement with the TMDLs than I do. So S8, I mentioned there are segments of it that weren't shown in that previous slide. And that's four monitoring staff in our group that deal with regional status and trends, evaluate our program effectiveness and do source identification. And then there's stormwater discharge monitoring that I don't believe we actively do anymore. Essentially, this last item in here, it sounds funky, payment into collective funds. There are some options laid out in the permit where we can pay into a fund to not have to do some of this work, but fund others who do this work and evaluate the effectiveness of these programs. We have opted to essentially pay into that fund and then get paid back for the monitoring work that we're able to do in regional status and trends and lower Columbia urban streams and things like that. Jeff can correct me on any of this if I'm off on any of it, but that's my understanding of it. It's a funny little system they have going, but essentially we pay into it and then we contract with ecology on the monitoring work that we're able to accomplish and provide them the results for their larger regional evaluations and such. And then, of course, S9 is the annual report, and we're coming up on that right now. The deadline's March 31st. Every year, there's a set of questions that have to be answered. They range from number of inspections on construction sites to, you know, did you do trainings in various parts of the county? And there's reporting responsibilities in a lot of different places in the county, other divisions in public works, facilities, and community development where, you know, they do a fair amount of dealing with the development community and, permitting. So where we get our funding is essentially we have a fee that's codified in the Clark County Code. There's a certain RCW that allows for collection of stormwater fees. You know, our justification for collecting that fee is to comply with the NPDES permit, which is, you know, surface water and stormwater. The RCWs don't specifically deal with NPDES permits because I believe they predate the whole system and ecology. So it's kind of an interesting relationship. I started doing some research into that more recently, but in any case, our budget last year was $8 million. There's certain capital program elements and stuff that we just weren't able to complete last year because of various issues. Our budget's a bit higher this year to reflect some of those capital projects that are going to start getting done this year. On the left is a pie chart of kind of where portions of that budget go. And you can see just how big capital and permitting and planning and maintenance and operations are in this. You know, our program is really heavily focused on maintaining the stormwater facilities we have, and finding opportunities to improve water quality through capital programs. And then, you know, smaller chunks of that are outreach and education, mapping and monitoring and, you know, just administrative costs that are associated with implementing all of this. Jeff will Tef will tell you, the capital spending varies. It's very up and down based on whether we're designing and permitting things or if we're really getting into construction and having things built. And it's kind of cyclical. I think he'll expound a bit more on that with his capital programs talk here. So any case, all of this kind of comes together to form this this org chart, which I kind of shoved onto a slide that was too small and I didn't resize the text boxes too well. We have a separate slide that's just a little bit cleaner than this, but in any case, on the left side of this whole thing, you've kind of got our clean water division, and we have 16 staff within the clean water division that work to implement all of this. And then of course there's all of that support that I was talking about. We get a lot of support from, you know, primarily 3-4 other divisions in public works. You know, 4 if you include fleet that maintains all of our vehicles and capitalizes all of that. And then you have kind of the administrative overall department support. And recently with a reorganization, a couple of people who were in the clean water division structure got shuffled around a little bit. Eric is one of those. He's actually in our communications group to sort of enable him to have some more tools at his disposal for some of his more public facing work. And then there's Andrea who sort of shuffled over into finance. I actually need to update this slide too, because Alex and budget actually shuffled around into inventory, and they're trying to hire somebody there. But and then actually Sabra was also in our division as an office assistant. But all of these people essentially do most of the same work that they did before. They're just, you know, in a different management structure to, you know, better support their type of work that isn't really, you know, deeply technical stuff necessarily. So, and then we've got this slide. I know I showed you this a bit. This is kind of more of an overview of how we comply with all of those requirements of the permit that I just discussed. And again, I know some of this text is a little small. It's, you know, it's condensed. This is a dense slide. You have copies of these, or you will, if that presentation doesn't include this. But, you know, this kind of shows the relationship between the Department of Ecology sitting up here. It kind of leaves the federal piece of it out. But Clark County has issued a permit, and, you know, then we're sort of the lead on compliance with, like I said, that supporting role of community development in permitting new development and redevelopment. And we write the manual that governs how new development and redevelopment has to meet these standards. There's actually some options left open for communities for meeting those requirements. One is to use the Western Washington Stormwater Management Manual for Western Washington. Or we can actually develop an equivalent manual, which is the option that we chose to do. And a big driver behind that is our manual has a little bit more robust information on maintenance of the facilities. So we've opted to go that route. And part of the implementation of it is developers, you know, they submit their plans for permitting to community development, and community development reviews things based on our manual that we in the Clean Water Division maintain and update. So the most recent update for that was 2021. Before that was 2015. So it updates with the permit as necessary. Any case, clean water kind of breaks down into sort of these three major umbrellas. There's permit compliance, and that's sort of the reporting and documentation and inspection and source control program. And then there's Jeff kind of oversees our infrastructure and monitoring groups. And that's where that capital plan gets implemented. And we have monitoring staff that run around. And these are really the things that they work on in particular with, you know, the money that we pay into Ecology and contract back to them. We actually also contract occasionally to, you know, City of Camas and City of La Center and do some monitoring work for them. when that comes up. And it's a cooperative group of municipalities. So, you know, it's good to see. But really, you know, we have work products that come out of all of this stuff to comply with the permit. And I'm not going to list all of these, but the big ones really here are the 6-year capital improvement plan that we issue every year. We have the stormwater management plan, and then some various other smaller reports and things like that. The stream health report is a big one that we're coming up on an update for. So that is really the culmination of a lot of the monitoring group's work. So in terms of, you know, tangible results that are published out there, those are the big things that we produce every year. And again, over here, I can't possibly undersell the support that we get from, you know, Eric now outside of the Division for Outreach and Education. You guys know how much he gets accomplished. And of course, you know, our inspection and maintenance crews. Inspection is an interesting topic, which we've been talking about extensively today. We actually have inspectors within Clean Water and outside. And I'm going to jump back real quick here. These three here, Carrie, Rich, and Bob, they inspect private facilities, and Bob is the one that really kind of drives forward our source control program. These two really focus on privately owned facility inspection and you know, following up on defects that they find and educating the owners of these facilities on what needs to get done. Publicly owned facilities are actually done a little differently. Our construction group over here in engineering and construction, they inspect the publicly owned facilities, and then Rhodes does lots of the maintenance work on them. So it's an interesting little paradigm right now, the way that things have come together. It used to be that all of the facility inspection was over here. At some point, that workload grew, and we took on privately owned facilities within Clean Water. So how that evolves in the future, I don't know. It's a topic that's up for discussion right now. Within the last couple of days, actually, it's really our eyes kind of turned to that, oddly enough. So in any case, and then of course we have street sweeping and vegetation management work that, you know, all support sort of keeping our facilities operating properly and keeping them clean. And yeah, so that is the crash course on the permit for the most part. This is a little bit different look at our programs here. And this kind of indicates what some of our partner agencies are and where responsibilities fall under all of these different headings. Whether that's within public works or some of this even actually overlaps with public health work. And Eric actually meets with public health occasionally also. A bit less of a part in things than a lot of the other work that we do, but and then of course there's GIS, which that's a big database. There's some changes coming, I think, to how we use our GIS databases with moves to cloud systems, if I'm remembering right. But we do get support from our GIS group on that as well. And really it's two people that kind of build our mapping databases, or keep building on our mapping databases on a continuous basis as more and more of these systems come online. So that's a big effort in itself. Yeah. So Alice has also put together this sort of list of additional resources. These are, you know, these will point in the direction of, again, some of the more tangible items that we produce, as well as the actual phase one permit. A link that we did want to include on here is Stormwater Partners of Southwest Washington, which Eric is very heavily involved in. And they have lots of projects going on right now. Some of them are grant funded. Most of them are grant funded, actually, if I don't trip and drive is. The facility maintenance resources were. So anyway, one of the big efforts that he went through recently, And he's so happy, I think, to be done with it and have the result and be able to see Carrie and Rich use this stuff. And so it's kind of a nice tie-in between education and outreach and sort of what our inspectors do. They built all these educational resources for people who maintain facilities, whether they're generally they're targeted at private owners of stormwater facilities. And it's sort of checklists of activities that need to be done on whatever basis, annual or semi-annual, and kind of some information on how to go about doing those. It's a huge set of resources. I'm not going to go into too much detail. It's I believe that it's all posted on the Stormwater Partners website now. So some really cool results of our work that are useful outside of just our people. But I know Carrie and Rich have started carrying these things around to start handing out to people who own these various types of facilities. So. And then another project that Eric worked on was Explore Your Watershed, which is like a story map. It's pretty neat. My wife and I, of course, when this was published, zoomed in on Lacamas because that's the watershed we're in and started looking at it. And yeah. So, all things that sort of support our annual reporting and compliance with the permit. I know that was a bit of a crash course. The permit is a big, complicated document. But hopefully that sheds some light on where all of this comes from and why we're doing what we're doing. Oops. There we go. So I will stop there. I will let anybody ask any questions they might have at this point. See if I can answer them or if Jeff needs to come save me.
I'll ask one.
Yeah.
You've got a stormwater monitoring report that takes stormwater from all over all the watersheds that we have, and you report on it. How do we access that stormwater monitoring report on a fairly temporal basis?
So I think the Stream Health report that's posted right now is an old one from 2010. The updated one, we are working on getting a work session with council right now to present it to them before we finish it up and get it posted. Jeff,
how do we get the data that goes into it?
Oh, yes. Okay. Well, that is a compilation of many monitoring stations. And I believe we currently, Ben said this morning, we have 21 of them. And those are, I believe most of them are telemetry, if I'm not mistaken. They have modems and all yes. that. And it's actually cloud managed data sets that we have a staff member that spends a lot of time managing data and reviewing it, QA, QCing it. And we've got another member of our monitoring crew that has been getting himself versed in R to do all the statistical analysis and build some tools that are really useful for doing some of that trend analysis. I will let Jeff take over. He looks like he has things he wants to say.
Well, I was just going to say, we will walk through some of that stuff, guys. When I get into the other piece, so we can, you know, we could talk now or we can push that a little bit to the other.
Let's keep going. I'm sorry I jumped in.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. It's a good question. So are we on to me, Alice?
Yes. Yes, well, Jeff, we are. And just one, I guess we can wait and I'll do some of the housekeeping when it gets to my turn.
All right. So, thanks everyone for joining us today and getting a little primer on this stuff. I'm Jeff Schnabel. As Justin said, I manage the stormwater infrastructure programming as well as the maintenance or the monitoring assessment group. So two of those kind of trunks that Justin was showing on the org chart. And we cover essentially the storm sewer mapping work, capital planning for our structural stormwater program, and the maintenance work. That's all part of the infrastructure branch. And then on the monitoring branch, the stuff that you were just chatting about with Justin a second ago. So we'll kind of take a look into a couple of those, not in great detail, because I think Alice is going to have some stuff coming up through the year that you'll get a chance to talk in more detail about some of these things. But we thought we'd give you a little bit more about what we do on a couple of these. So I'm going to chat briefly about the stormwater capital planning element, and then also the monitoring element. I had just kind of written down a couple of things just to follow on with the maintenance part that Justin was just talking about. Just to give you a sense, I think, of kind of the magnitude of that maintenance operation that we do. I don't know how familiar everyone is with how much infrastructure the county owns as far as this stormwater stuff. So just to throw out a couple of basic numbers, we've got about 1,600 county-owned stormwater treatment and flow control units, right, or BMPs spread across the county. That includes, you know, something upwards of, you know, 400 stormwater ponds of various types, upwards of 700 biofiltration swales. We've got something around 700 stormwater filter cartridge systems that are basically like a big cartridge that filters stormwater just like the oil filter in your car. And when they get full, we unscrew them and screw in a new one, right? Those kinds of things. About 15,000 inlets where the stormwater leaves the street, goes into the pipe system. About 1,600 dry wells where stormwater is injected into the ground after being treated. And on top of that, about 500 miles of pipe buried out there in various places. So there's an extraordinary amount of infrastructure out there that makes up the MS4. And so we spend about $3 million a year out of our budget dealing with that maintenance burden. So just to give you a little bit of a sense of that, and I'll be quiet about maintenance and move into a little bit about the capital program. And I will try to just blast through this and be pretty high level, but feel free to, you know, throw some questions out. Let me see if I can first get this to share. So at this point, you probably see a blue screen, I hope.
Yep.
Excellent. Now you see a slideshow.
Yes.
All right. Okay. So I'll talk first just for a few minutes about the stormwater capital plan and our infrastructure. Some of this will be a little bit of a nexus or a repeat of some of the stuff that Justin went over on those slides. So I'll be really quick. Essentially, the reason we do capital planning and stormwater capital projects is to meet those permit requirements. We want to protect and enhance our streams, wetlands, minimize impacts to those receiving waters. We have specific regulatory requirements that we need to meet with our capital planning and stormwater structurals. S5C7 that Justin mentioned is our structural stormwater control program. So we are required in the permit to have a program to prevent or reduce impacts to the waters of the state by retrofitting our stormwater system and or building new stuff to further treat or control stormwater. In this newest permit that we've got, the Department of Ecology has devised a point system. And so when we build and design stormwater capital projects, we calculate a number of points, and that's how our permit compliance is currently measured. We have to score X number of points between the time the permit is issued and when they stop counting points. So that's been a new challenge this time around with this newest permit since 2019, but we are in good shape and scoring all the points we need to, which is good news. There are maintenance and operation elements that go into our capital planning. So some of our more expensive maintenance operations, like when we have failing stormwater facilities, it costs a little bit more money. Instead of doing those under our maintenance program, we roll those into our capital planning and do them as part of our 6 years capital plan. We also are required to deal with any problems that we're having with those drywells I mentioned. So I said we had 1,600 of them or so that are publicly owned or county owned. We've got about, well, a few years ago, we had about 40 of them that had been inspected and caused a threat to groundwater. And so we've been working through those, and we're down to about less than a dozen of those that are still kind of problem children when it comes to threat to groundwater. So we're working through those as we go. Growth Management Act also has a little bit of a nexus with our capital planning. So I mentioned the 6-year capital plan. That's kind of the cornerstone of our overall capital planning program. We update it annually. The current one we have right now is from 2022 to 2027. The council adopts that, much like they do the capital program for roads. We have a, you know, pretty straightforward process. We look at our priorities for any given 6-year period. We need to meet those permit requirements, meet those obligations. We have a system for identifying projects, verifying that they're actually decent projects. We have a fairly elaborate spreadsheet model that some of our engineering staff work through to try to prioritize these projects in various categories. And then we program them into a 6-year matrix using the funding that we have, and try to make sure that we're hitting those permit targets and those point totals we need, as well as making sure that we're taking care of the priorities we have as a program and as a county. I threw in just one little bit about grants here. Grants are an important part of our funding strategy for the capital program, as well as the program overall. The entire Clean Water Program has got a lot of grant support, which is a great thing. In our current capital plan, we've got 5 grant-funded projects. We've got about $1.7 million in awards for those 5 projects. One of our big next things that we'd like to do with stormwater capital is putting together a 20-year stormwater plan, and we'll talk much more about this as we get on through the year as Justin and I and others start really wrapping our heads around what it takes to make this plan work. But it will be a nice thing to have, because we'll be able to look out a little farther. It'll be helpful as far as programming financial needs and queuing up projects in a way that is a little bit more efficient over time. So these are the project types that we typically build or do. I mentioned the capital repairs. So anytime a capital repair for one of our pieces of infrastructure exceeds $25,000, it goes into this plan. Retrofits are the bread and butter of what we do. And so that's either for water quality or for flow control, going into an area that is either underserved as far as its stormwater control and treatment, either because it was developed a long time ago and doesn't have stuff that's up to standard, or it doesn't have anything at all. So we might be going in and retrofitting an existing facility and making it better, or we might be going into an area that has nothing and adding some treatment or flow control. UIC, underground injection control, that's where we go in and retrofit those problem dry wells. We do some stream habitat improvement type of projects, typically through grant funding. We don't get as much traction with ecology as far as points in our program for those types of stream enhancement projects. So you don't see a lot of them, but when we do, we tend to try to leverage grant dollars for them. We try to reforest about 6 acres on average of county property annually for our reforestation program. So you'll see some of those. And then we can also get credit for purchasing property that's intact and keeping it for stormwater benefits. So we usually do that by leveraging money with our Conservation Futures Legacy Lands program you might have heard of, where they are looking for high-value properties, high-value habitats, and purchasing those to kind of protect. And we can contribute funding to that and get credit under our permit. We also throw a little bit of money annually into planning for that reforestation program. Also, some of that retrofit planning that I mentioned, that has a separate pot of money that we dedicate to looking at specific areas of high importance. And then we dump some money into our street sweeping program as well to kind of take care of some of that arterial heavy traffic use area. We fund part of that for public works. The way that looks for the current capital program, we've got 27 projects and some ongoing programs. A little over $10 million over 6 years is our current plan. You can see that we are dominant, as I said, with the water quality type of retrofits right now. We're really focused on those in some of our more urbanized basins, but also a fair amount of flow control, hydrology type of retrofits, a couple of large habitat projects, including out at Heritage Farms, which is one that you'll probably hear about in the near future. And then on smaller amounts, everything down to reforestation, some property acquisition, and all the other pieces. So that rounds out the program. And this is just kind of a condensed version of what the matrix looks like. We typically have a six-year matrix, and I'll just point out that in any six-year period, the year right after when we publish the plan is the most locked in, right? And so we're very sure of what we're doing in 2022, but in 2023, 24, 25, it gets a little more fluid. And as we do each year's iteration, we upgrade things and it gets locked in, just kind of on a rolling schedule. And that is all I brought for you on this particular part. Are there questions before I flip over to monitoring, or want me to back up at all? That was kind of fast. All right. If you come up with anything, Justin knows where I live and can point you to me. All right. So now let me just do a quick shuffle here. All right. Am I still with you?
Yes.
Should have monitoring. Okay. So, that's interesting. This one's only showing up on this screen. All right. Well, I'm not ignoring you, but I'm going to have to look over this way now, because that's where my slideshow is showing up. So really quickly, probably less on this even than we had on the Capitol, but so building on to what Justin was talking about, for our monitoring under that S8 permit requirement, we've got a number of major projects and programs that we deal with our four monitoring staff. The primary one, I think, would be this first one. Can you see what I'm doing? Am I like live on the screen?
Yeah.
Highlight? Okay. So this Lower Columbia Urban Streams, that is part of that pay to fund, deal that Justin was talking about. So regional monitoring is a permit requirement for Clark County, as well as all the phase two permittees who are in our area, City of Battleground, City of Vancouver, City of Washougal and Camas. And so with that requirement, Ecology designed a monitoring program that they want to see implemented for urban streams within Southwest Washington. It goes all the way up into the Cowlitz area. What we do to meet that permit requirement is we pay money from Clark County, and it's something like $75,000 a year. That is our share of funding this particular research. The neat thing that happened is that Ecology is actually contracting back to us to perform this work. So Clark County Clean Water does the monitoring for that group of permittees as a contractor to Ecology, which we get paid for. So we essentially get our money back, as well as a little bit of money from the other permittees to do this work for the state. And that's been working pretty good. We do habitat monitoring, invertebrates in the stream, stage measurements, conductivity, sediment testing, things like that at a number of urban sites. There's 17 total in that program, five of which are permanent long-term sites, the remainder of which are kind of on a rotating basis. So we are on year two of that first round of that one. The other big one, well, two more big ones, actually, Wadeable Streams, there we have a set of 51 stations all across the county that have been going, many of them for almost 20 years, 18 years in most cases, for these 9 index stations that are listed there. So these are what we call our long-term trend sites. And then we have 42 additional sites that we go to for 1 year out of every 5. One of you was asking about where we get the data for the stream health report. The Weightable Streams Project is where we get the bulk of our data. Between that and our hydrology monitoring, which is what Justin was mentioning as well, we've got 9 stream flow gauges and another 6 rain gauges across the county as well. And so we've got between all of this web of stations out there, we've got a fair amount of data over time that we can bring in and put towards things like the Stream Health Report. I will point out that the Stream Health Report per se is not measuring stormwater quality. It's measuring surface water quality in our streams, which is highly impacted in many of these streams by stormwater runoff, but we're not actually monitoring end of pipe to see what the stormwater runoff looks like. We've done a great deal of that in the past, mostly under permit required monitoring for ecology, and there's a great deal of that data out there in report form and in raw data form, if folks are interested in kind of poking into that, that we have collected over the past decade and a half. But this current effort is focused on the surface waters themselves, if that makes sense. And we can follow up on that as well. LCUS, weightable hydrology, and then we are doing some bacterial DNA monitoring for microbial source tracking, trying to get a handle on sources of bacteria in areas that have TMDL cleanup plans for bacteria. So we're working quite a bit with some partners in the East Fork Lewis River right now, Whipple Creek area, and we can take samples and figure out through these DNA samples whether we have human DNA in the stream, human waste, or livestock waste, or dog waste. It helps us kind of hone in on the sources that we need to maybe try to deal with through some of our other programming. And then finally, our other big one, illicit discharge detection and elimination. So we have to screen about 12% of our MS4 annually on average in order to meet our permit requirements for screening for discharges. So what we're looking for in those cases is anything that's not stormwater or that's not supposed to be discharged into our system. So we do a lot of screening of both pipes and ditches to get a handle on when there's problems entering the stream. And then folks like Bob Patterson and the source control program that Justin mentioned kind of take it from there and try to remove some of those sources for us. Well, hopefully that makes a little sense, a lot there. The only other thing I had for you is just a quick couple of maps showing a couple of those things that I just mentioned. One is the locations of our flow and precipitation gauges. So you can see we've got these little, it's kind of small. I'm not sure if I can make this bigger, a little bit bigger. So we've got rain gauges out here at Ventersburg, one in Orchard, out at the Salmon Creek Treatment Plant. So we've got those kind of spread around. And then our flow gauges, these are all on smaller tributaries. They're not all on like the same stream, so they're all monitoring different areas, but we do have a number of those stream gauges that are part of these projects. And then finally, or nearly finally, this is the map of those weightable stream stations. This is the 51 that we use to kind of drive a lot of our stream health reporting, things like that. So the orange ones are the 9 long-term index sites that have been going pretty much since the early 2000s. And then the yellows are the other ones that are visited on a panel basis. So we do a panel of them every year for a 5-year period. Does that make sense? And then my last slide is just some of the uses that we have for these data, right? People always wonder, well, why are you monitoring? What are you doing with this stuff? Quite a few different things. So there's permit reports that obviously we're required to put in for the illicit discharge work and for that Lower Columbia urban streams work. The stream health report is a really great tool. We've only done one about every 10 years, so we're extremely excited to have one done this year to be able to share with you guys shortly. We do a lot of work with the state for their TMDL water cleanup plans. We support through data collection and data sharing. We support our basin and capital planning with some of this work because we can sort of, as I was saying, we can kind of shuffle our implementation towards particular problems that monitoring discovers sometimes. Education outreach, the same thing. We can kind of give some background information for some of the work that Eric does. Our hydrology data systems, our precipitation and our flow gauging, that is very important for hydraulic and hydrologic modeling for some of our watershed planning requirements. We do trends based on these things, which is part of the long-term stream health report. And then we just share a lot of data. We get a lot of requests from our partner agencies, our partner, you know, consultants, and other groups like the Clark Conservation District, for instance, that are out there doing good work, and the data that we have can support some of what they're doing. So that is hopefully not a complete jumble, but that's a few things about monitoring. Hopefully not too much or too little. We can always go into more of this later at another date too. And that's it.
Hey Jeff, it's the other Jeff here. Quick question on monitoring. I think you said something about annual for some of these rotating stations.
Yes.
But, you know, I'm just envisioning that water flow, water temperature change with seasons and so on. Is there something with the monitoring that takes those variations into account? Or doing an annual monitor and it's always, you know, the same month of every year, so we're getting some consistent picture of how things are changing?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So for, say, the weightable streams, right, we have the ones that we're sampling all the time, the long-term index sites, and then we have the ones we're doing on a rotating panel, so a year at a time. So when we're rotating around, we spend a year doing monthly sampling at each of those rotating sites, right? So we'll have a panel of about 8 of them, say, in 2022. That panel of 8, we're only going to do in 2022, and then we'll come back in 2027. Mm-hmm. But during 2022, we will be there monthly on randomly selected dates to take water quality samples, as well as just get an idea of, you know, any kind of spot testing. And then we do once a year, we do take those bug samples. We do continuous temperature monitoring at these sites for the summer months to get an idea of what our temperature conditions are through the hot period. So there's a fair amount of data that are collected over a 1 year period at those spots. And the bulk of it is on that random timeline, once a month, but at a random date. So we can get a pretty good idea of what our real conditions are. And then we use things like the Oregon Water Quality Index or benthic index of biologic integrity to consolidate all that data down into kind of a digestible metric of, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, right? Does that make sense? I'm not sure if I'm totally getting at what you're asking, Jeff, but.
No, that's great. That gives me a much better picture in my head about how all this is handled and what kind of data we've got. Appreciate it.
Yep. Yeah, there'll be definitely more to come. As we get close on this stream health report, it'll be fun to share some of this stuff going forward.
And how are we using the monitoring data to inform things like the public outreach efforts that the committee is supposed to work on, kind of as you're the partner? I mean, we identified areas where, say, agriculture office is serious. We're working with Farm Bureau and to address that kind of an issue. How we're using monitoring.
Unfortunately, you were breaking a little bit up on my machine, but I think I got the gist of what you were saying. And yes, it is. It's when we talk about outreach or working with our partner agencies, right? An example in the education program right now, I think you may be aware of some of the work that Eric and Andrea Logue have been doing over the past year as far as pet waste control. There's specific locations, specific trail systems where they are looking to try to figure out ways to help reduce the practice of leaving pet waste. It's another kind of permit requirement thing. And part of how they pick where they're doing that work is by looking at areas that have really kind of bad situations as far as the level of fecal coliform. That's just one example. But another example in an agency sense is we're currently cooperating with the Conservation District and Department of Ecology and several other entities in the East Fork Lewis River to work on what we on a big grant. It's called the Poop Smart Clark. I don't know if anyone's mentioned it in your meetings yet, but it was named by the Conservation District after a larger program up north. But the gist of those types of it's a PIC program, a pollutant identification and control program. And what we are doing is kind of using monitoring to drive a whole bunch of outreach and BMP implementation within the East Fork Lewis River in areas that have some of the worst, again, bacteria issues. So we're working on using data collected by our programs to inform follow-up work with specific issue areas by the public health department, as well as the conservation district to do things with like agricultural interests. Public health deals with septic. Part of that DNA work that we do can tell the difference between human and say cows. So we can have the health department follow up with the human problems, and we can have the conservation district follow up with the agricultural problems, for instance. So those types of things is where we're trying to utilize some of these data in a little bit more focused way to get results on the ground. Does that make sense?
Makes sense. Thank you.
Another thing that hasn't been mentioned here that actually kind of marries monitoring with education and outreach. It's not data that we necessarily use, but there's actually a pretty cool program. It sounds like we do a lot of work for other agencies, and that can be true, but it works the other way around too. We actually have a contract with City of Vancouver. They run the Student Watershed Monitoring Network. And that's a fun one. They have one staff member that's pretty much entirely dedicated to that program every year. And she identifies schools and takes kids on field trips and with monitoring equipment.
She does a good job.
She does. She's great. I got to meet her, a couple months after I started, and she's really enthusiastic about it.
Yep.
It's a cool program. I mean, I'm glad that we fund it. I'm glad that we've been able to keep it going. The contract renewal just happened, I think, for another 5 years. So, as far as we know, Rainey is funded and she'll keep doing that. But it's, I mean, having not gotten the opportunity to do something like that when I was, that young, it's cool. I like it a lot.
Yep.
That data is maintained, though. They collect it and they maintain it. So separate monitoring network that's not staff effort, but,
Yeah. Pretty cool stuff, though. Yep.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I don't want to take too much of your time, folks, tonight, but I do appreciate the introduction to y'all, and then we'll look forward to more detail and more work together as we go forward, unless there's other questions.
No, thank you very much, Jeff. Unfortunately, your screen is black right now. We can't see you.
Oh, no. Oh, no, you know why? It's because I never turned my video back on. It turned off when I shared.
There you go.
All right. So here I am again. I'll probably bow out then unless you guys need anything and let you get on with your business.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks, Jeff.
Good to meet y'all.
Thank you.
Bye, Jeff.
And so just to do a little bit of housekeeping, just to make sure, we do have the three new commissioners on here, Sandra, Roger, Jeff. Do you want to go by Jeff or Jeffrey?
Jeff is fine.
Okay.
And as long as we don't confuse the two Jeffs.
Yeah. Well, we can make it work. And we had two commissioners with Maynard, so we were all right last time.
I'm going to start calling Jeff Staff Jeff.
There you go.
Manager Jeff.
There you go. And are you just your commissioner, Jeff? And then I just to be on the safe side, we have been treating this as a public meeting in case we did have a quorum. We don't, so we're safe that way. But we have been treating it. It is recorded. We'll put it up on the website so it's there. And one of the great things, Eric actually is able to take the video and audio and strip it and just put the audio up. So that'll be available. I did also just on the off chance, since we did put this out and publish it as a public meeting, I did check the webs, my voicemail as well as my email and the Clean Water Department email, and there were no public comments, but it was also something that somebody could just easily just, it had the link and everything, and they could just easily get into it. So that's there. So I just wanted to do a little bit of the housekeeping. I don't have as nearly as interesting or cool things as the guys had. Mine are pretty dry. And so I'm not going to put up because you can very easily read these things separately. But I did want to just briefly mention the commission spent about well over a year, maybe a year and a half, working on their strategic plan and working on the mission, vision, and core values, as well as some of their long-term goals. And I sent you that information, but I kind of want to just go over it really quick, just because I think it's something that's important, because a lot of time and effort and wordsmithing went into this, and that the Clean Water Commission is mission is to collaborate with Clark County residents, government entities, businesses, and nonprofit organizations to enhance water quality, improve flow, and protect ecological integrity of our watersheds. And the vision is Clark County with self-sustaining and healthy watersheds that benefit the county's human communities, wildlife, and environment. And the three core values are the stewardship, cooperation, and transparency. And that really truly does, I think, represent a lot of the values and the core aspects of the commission. And some of the things on their long-term goals were to identify areas of need and promote collaboration in water quality programs for Clark County, advance public outreach and serve as community liaisons on watershed quality issues and ecosystem impacts, provide helpful advice to county leadership to improve and protect surface water and ecological health, identify and support funding opportunities to promote healthy watersheds in Clark County, and advise staff on improving systems and programs to meet permit requirements and water quality goals in a functional and effective manner. And then each year, it hasn't been fully identified, and that's one of the things I think I'm going to talk with you guys on the council, a commission, and maybe as a commission, if you want to do it, your own yearly objectives as a big commission. In the past, it's been just based on the work groups. That'll be one of the things I probably will bring up at the next meetings is how do you want to handle your yearly objectives and how you want to reach your goals. So that's one of those things that be thinking about in your work groups and how you want to go about achieving and helping with that and helping assist us. That is on the big picture. That's kind of the overarching goals, and some of the things that we're looking at also is how that you can help support the Clean Water Division and the Clark County's mission for stormwater and meeting the permit requirements. And a lot of the next aspects for county policies, I am going to be a little bit high level on this because everybody, except Bob, I think, has their certificate in for the OPMA. I just went back through and looked, and Bob, if you mailed it.
I have a question.
Sure.
I went to the Attorney General website, and I watched the videos, and I went through the rest of the materials. I never saw a place where it printed a certificate other than a blank certificate that you filled out. This?
There is. It is not the easiest to find.
That explains why.
I think I remember that being tough to find.
It's not the most. It is definitely one of those things where I'll have to go back and help find it for you because it truly is not an easy aspect. And if not, I think we can print off one of the new ones. And if you can just let me know the date and I can, we can do up the certificate for you, for when you do it. And I think somebody else, maybe Roger actually needs to sign his certificate. So there's a couple of those there that, everybody is pretty much has done and reviewed it. So just, you know, high level, because the commission is, even though you're purely advisory, you are created by a county ordinance and codes. So we follow and we've looked into it and we do definitely fall under needing to do the OPMA, Open Meeting Act. And some of the things that are the most important are obviously it's always open to the public. With quorum and we have to have a quorum in order to do business. No secret ballots, and that actually means we have to have voice votes. We can't do written votes. That was one of the things that changed that we needed to make sure. And you'll hear me throughout your tenure where I really I'm a strong advocate for this because the personal liability is fairly significant. It's $500 for any member who attends a meeting knowingly that it violates OPMA and $1,000 for any subsequent violation. So that can get pretty onerous right off the bat and that everybody needs to complete their training within 90 days and everybody has to do it within 4 years. So I think for that's like the biggest aspects of our training with that. There's some other things with, some of the practical aspects of, doing the training and, meeting in public. Most of those kind of things, I handle a lot of, you know, getting it on the website, making sure we notify the newspapers and not having a meeting on a holiday. The other aspect, we won't ever have an executive session. That actually is one of those things where it's only the council, a commissioner, and you have to have it's a very, very specific thing and you have to bring in one of the attorneys, staff attorneys, and they are in there and it's not something that, there's very significant rules for executive session and most of the things we do not cover that. So, it's not anything that we ever, would need to be able to use. The other big thing that you'll see and you'll hear me on a lot is the email exchanges. One of the aspects that is really important is that an email exchange that could actually constitute a public meeting. And so it's important that you, and I'll just actually read there the types of email exchanges that can constitute a meeting. If the majority of the members of a governing body take action on behalf of the agency through an email exchange, that would actually constitute a public meeting now and where it wouldn't actually be public. Now, an action under this would mean, could be just the mere discussion. And it could be one of those things where somebody says something, somebody else replies, somebody else replies, somebody else replies. And that you don't have to be on at the same time having this discussion, but just having the chain is a conversation and discussion. And that actually could create the issue and having a violation appear. So if you send something out, and one of the ways we've just gotten, we've just dealt with it is you send it to me, ask me to send it out to everybody, and then we send it out. So that we don't receive it. You can get passive receipt, for, just getting information. And if you have to, you put it up there, you know, do not discuss, things like that. But we found that it's just easier and better and safer. And we always send it to your commission email. The only time I'll ever contact you on your personal or your cell phone usually is just say, hey, check your email. Check your commissioner email. You've got a bunch of stuff you need to look at. And I'll do that sometimes. But I won't, I usually try not to send anything out to your personal emails. And so that's the kind of the most important aspects about that. Yes, sir.
Is it up to us to keep copies of every email we receive, or because they're all going through you anyway, we can delete all those?
Yep. And that's also, that's the other thing is, for the public records requests, that's why, because you're through Gmail, you're not in the county system. We run everything through staff. So you just send everything through me. If you're sending, if you're emailing Sandra, you know, or Sandra, or Michelle or whomever about something in your group, for your work group, just CC me. Believe me, it just goes in and it's just something for the system to capture in case there was something that, cause you're talking about business. And so that way, even though you don't have a quorum, you're talking about business and that way we capture it. And if the public records request needs it, they can access it and get it, without having to access your personal emails and accounts or computers or things like that. So that's why, we ask you to just CC me on everything. And, it's easy for me to delete. And the people with the computers and IT, they deal with all that. So, that's one of the most important aspects about it. Let's see. And I usually send everything out. And obviously the don't reply all, aspect. And, the next part is pretty much everything is, all the other policies are pretty much found in the bylaws. So I'm going to spend a little bit of time with the bylaws. I think actually one of the things with the bylaws this year actually is I think it's been 2 years since they've been adopted. So we may need to, potentially go in and look at them again this year or potentially next year, but that may be something that one of the work groups wants to take on or a group wants to take on because, one of the things that we did was, we spent about a year working on, the bylaws and getting them up to date, did a major overhaul and, part of the bylaws say every 2 years, please go back in and review them. So that may be something that, we look at down the road. There's a few things I could see where we may want to update. I'm already going to be sending in a few, aspects with the, trying to think what it's called, the, work groups. And, you know, I think that's the one aspect of the work group, was that, you know, we're looking at specifically maybe taking out that verbiage that we have in there that, you know, currently there are three different groups and this is what they're named are, so that it's not in there. We do have some latitude in there, but I think we may end up needing to take some of that out. Some of the things that come up for, commissioners is, conflict of interest and having, you know, abstentions. And I think for this, the most important aspect is, and we have some people that have had, that have been on the commission, that their position, they may work on a project or do something that was specifically the county and or Clean Water was the client. So, and this has been a number of different different commissioners over the years. And so I think it's important that if you do have something that is, you know, direct financial interest, obviously getting paid, or your company is working for somebody, or you own stock, although that doesn't really necessarily work for the commission. But if you have a conflict of interest, you should identify it and say, you know, I have a conflict of interest about this. My job has gotten this this job, and we're going to be working on this. So I have some extra information about what's really going on. And then the commission can decide whether or not they want to hear that information or not, or if it's appropriate. And you can always ask if it's something that you would think that somebody would want to have you have this conversation. Most of the time, the information is relevant, and, you know, I can't think of any time where it hasn't been. And it's always been very meaningful to the discussion, and is appropriate in maintaining the confidentiality of the person's work or personal information and the county's interests. And obviously, if you can't, or there should be even a conflict of interest can be just perceived. And sometimes that's even harder and worse than real. So it's always better to err on the safe side. So it's always good to just identify and abstain from a vote or a discussion if it's an issue. So that's one of the big aspects that I want to make sure that everybody kind of has a clear interest on, because there's a number of people who have positions that would necessarily may come into play with that, with conflict of interest. The other ones, we have a couple other county policies that social media, nepotism, we had to have that one because we had two board members who were married. And so we had to make sure that we weren't crossing any lines with that. So we actually, you know, had to have that evaluated by the attorneys and all that, to see whether or not an HR, to make sure that we wouldn't have an issue, even though, you know, and it's, you know, it's a position of power. So, you know, we're okay there. So so we just had to talk to him and say, well, one of you can't be the chair and the other one can't. So, but really and truly, because it's an advisory board, HR was like, it's okay. You know, you don't really have any real true power in that aspect. You're not creating, you know, code or things like that. You're making recommendations to the council or to staff. So, things are a little bit easier for that. Social media, and I guess it even kind of ties in with a little bit on the conflict of interest. Love to have you promote Clean Water events and information, and have no problem. We don't have a problem with you using this information, but, it's important not to necessarily use a Clean Water event. We had a Friends of Trees kind of tree planting event where we had a potential person who may have taken that as a photo op and then used it for potential personal gain, where it was something that it was taking it from this aspect, and it was a kind of a much more political aspect. So we want to make sure that, just be careful, you know, and you can go on and read the lines. You know, they have, you know, rules about social media and making sure that, and, you know, it works also for, you know, for employees and staff of, you know, it's, everybody has to be careful about what they put out on social media, especially if you say, hey, I am a clean water, I'm a Clark County Clean Water Commissioner, and I say this, and, you know, blah, 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 that could potentially end up being something that somebody could say, oh, well, they're on the commission and they, you know, said this and they represent, you know, this is the voice of the commission or the county. And so, there have been people in the past, nothing on our commission or anything like that, that could have gotten in trouble. So, that's something to keep in mind. And I was just thinking there was one other kind of, with social media, and I cannot remember it off the top of my head. If I remember, I'll tell you, it just popped in my head. And then obviously diversity, and it's more important for, it's, based on equality, really, and equity. And the difference between equality and equity, is equality, everybody gets a pair of shoes. Equity is everybody gets a pair of shoes that fit. And so that's the big aspect that, you know, we, want to make sure that we are providing the best, most diverse and equitable aspects that we can for, especially getting into some of the environmental justice aspects. So there are other county policies out there, number of places, you know, with the diversity. There is, like with any place, there are, consequences if somebody is, not, being respectful of other people and exhibiting discriminatory aspects. So I encourage you to just go onto the Clark County website and go into the human resources and look up the policies, for these. We've never had a problem with it. So it shouldn't, you know, shouldn't be that big of a problem, but, you know, it's there. If for some reason there was an issue, there is a course for disciplinary action, which we've never had to follow through with on it. One of the other aspects is that we want to make sure that everybody attends meetings and that they do still, you know, want to have the 25 or 75% attendance, which can be difficult when we only have 6 meetings. That means you get one freebie a year. and you do definitely miss out on a lot if you don't attend all of them. Because the special meetings technically don't count towards attendance policy. So that's where it kind of becomes a little bit of a challenge. And it's really important in order to move forward to be able to have the attendance. So, and that's one of the things that we're looking at, maybe updating with the bylaws to allow for excused absences, because technically right now, excused absences aren't allowed. We can do attendance via telephone, and right now it's a lot easier with having the audio, video, and conference feed. So we'll see if and when we get back into being live, in person, if we'll be able, I think we should hopefully be able to do that. I haven't looked into that in the conference room that we're in. So, that'll be something I'll look into. And that is pretty much it on all of the administrative stuff. And look at that, at 6 o'clock. Anybody have any questions for me? I know I have all the boring stuff and now everybody's ready to I'll definitely call it a day. But that way we've got it covered. So
it's definitely quite the range of topics covered in an hour and a half, and it's a crash course. But I mean, what we're hoping is that it gives you guys an idea of what you want to hear more about in detail. And some of that's already set up, but you know, there's the rest of the year to think about. And
I will be having Rod, just to give you kind of a little bit of a I will be having Rod Swanson, our permit manager, will be coming in to give an overview update. And I've told him that he can only talk for 20 to 30 minutes. So, and that includes question and answer. So.
That man knows the permit to the word just about.
Yes, so, he he has forgotten more than we'll all know, ever know.
His knowledge of the permit far exceeds what I can share, off the top of my head, at least.
Yes.
So
he is really great. And then we're going to have Rich and Carrie, who are our private stormwater facility inspectors, come in and talk. And that is really, really fascinating. And they are so good at their job. And so they always, it's always, it'll be really interesting to see, how they do it. And they work really well with the private owners of the facilities on how to be maintaining their compliance. And then I'm also having, LSEP, the Lower Columbia Estuary, program is going to come in and talk about their work that they do for us and, some of the things that they've unique challenges and how they've overcome them and, with the pandemic. And then, Marley is slated. She's one of our monitoring staff. She's the one that has headed up the, stream health report. So she's going to be, giving the presentation in, May, on May 4th. She'll give that. And then I have right now set up in, for the fall spring, the fall special meeting. I have Julie Christian, who is, our vegetation management, guru, and she's also in charge of, the Schreiber reforestation project, which is a really large grant project that we've been working on. And she does a lot of also with our, she assists and she's the, our second person that does all the mapping and working with GIS. So, but previously she was our reforestation person. So, and veg management. So she's going to be, and she would pick all the plants that would be used for a lot of these projects. So she has really great knowledge about, that. So we're going to have her come in and kind of talk a little bit about that. And then I've left it open to find out what are some of the other topics that you guys are interested in to fill in the rest of the, fall meeting, or if you guys want to keep it more of another work session, if there's things that you, want to do, because that's what the spring and fall, meetings are, is they're set up to be a work session and or more heavily about, presentations. So be thinking about it. We've also had ecologies come in. We've had a lot of different people, a lot of different organizations have come in over the years to talk about different projects that have been going on. So be more than happy, you know, if you have something down the road that you want to work on. And then I know that there's some really big projects that Justin's looking at getting everybody involved in. But I'm going to be cognizant of your time and everybody else's. Anybody have any questions?
Not a question, it's more of a comment, just of appreciation for the time that you and Justin and others have put into this. Every time we meet, it just builds the knowledge bank and an understanding of the complexity of what you're doing, but also providing new avenues for us to have opportunities to impact that. And there's a lot of good conversation in the working groups, and everyone's just so eager to find out what those ways are. So I think for me, this just continues to expand my knowledge of what we're doing here, and I appreciate it very much.
And if you guys do have feedback on the presentations, these are revamped from previous ones. So, I mean, there were some, a missed zero in there and some text boxes that needs to be resized, you know, small stuff like that. But if there's anything in there that, you know, needs more information or needs expansion on it, just let us know what your opinions are. You know, like to see these be living trainings that can become more useful. If
they're very
if they
useful
need to be.
For me anyway.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
Good night.
Thanks, everybody. I'm gonna go
have a good night,
child.
Everyone.
I'll see you in a couple weeks.
Yeah. Alice, I am going to need some help on
okay.
getting that certificate. I couldn't figure out how to get it to print.
It is so hard. It is so hard to get to. It's like, it's really weird. I remember that. And I will go back and look at my directions because I know that was one of the things that it was very difficult. It's not laid out very well and it's not identified well. If it is a problem, I think in the past I've had to actually recreate one for somebody. So, here we go. Wait a second here.